If you are newer to First Baptist Church, my name is Jeff Moran. I'm the executive pastor here at the church, and I get to fill in on occasion. But today, this is one of those sad days because this is the end of my five-part sermon series. Now, if you're just here for the first time, I've preached this five-part sermon series, and I started in July of 2014. So this has been going, some of you are probably thinking, I'm glad this is the last of the series. But it's sad for me because I've got to come up with another one or figure something out. But we've been doing the five senses of God. So we started in July of 14, and I talked to you about we are God's sense of smell. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 15, Paul says that we are the aroma of Christ to God, to those that are saved and those that are perishing. And then we talked about God's sense of sight, and I mentioned Hagar. And we talked about how Hagar was the only one in Genesis 16 to ever name God. She said El Roi to God, which means the God who sees me or one who sees me. And God watched Hagar and saw her in her plight and helped her along the way. Then we talked about God's sense of touch last year, the week after Easter. And when we talked about that, I talked about John chapter 20 and Thomas and how Jesus showed Thomas the nail prints and Jesus invited Thomas to touch him, but the Bible does not say that Thomas touched Jesus. And I mentioned that you don't have to touch God to be touched by God. And then we talked this past December about God's sense of taste in Revelation chapter 3, the letter to the church in Laodicea, and how that we are neither hot nor cold, but we are lukewarm, so God's about to spit us out of his mouth. So that brings us to one more sense, and that's God's sense of hearing. Look up 1 Kings chapter 18. That's where we're going to be this morning, 1 Kings chapter 18. Now, I need to do just a little bit of background to catch you up to 1 Kings chapter 18, since we won't have time to read all of those scriptures. First of all, Israel was broken up into two kingdoms at this time, the northern kingdom of Israel, the southern kingdom of Judah. Those 12 tribes divided up among those two kingdoms. So here we're talking about the northern kingdom of Israel. They were ruled by kings. King Omri was the king that was there for a while, and he was the king over the northern kingdom. But what it said in the Bible about King Omri was that he was more evil in the sight of the Lord than all those that came before him. Well, then Omri had a son named Ahab, and King Ahab took over, and he ruled the northern kingdom for 22 years, and there it said it again in the Bible. King Ahab was more evil in the sight of the Lord than his father and all the others that have ruled before him. In fact, King Ahab was so bad that he thought it trivial to commit sin. It was no big deal. The other thing about King Ahab that was bad was that he married the daughter of the king of the Sidonians, and her name was Jezebel. This woman was wicked, and she served the god of Baal. And she went on a rampage, and she started killing the prophets of the Lord. And then we pick it up in chapter 17, and Elijah appears and says, because you have been so evil, King Ahab, there's going to be a drought in the land for several years. So now there's a drought going on, and Ahab's mad at Elijah for causing the drought, and Jezebel still killing the prophets. And then we come to 1 Kings 18 and look at verse 16. There's a guy that comes on the scene named Obadiah. Obadiah is a follower of God. His name means worshiper of Yahweh. Obadiah is trying to do what's right, but he also serves in evil King Ahab's court. So he's kind of riding the fence. But the one good thing that Obadiah has done is he hid 100 of the Lord's prophets so that Jezebel wouldn't kill him. So he hid 50 in one cave and 50 in another cave, and he was feeding them. But I want you to know, as we pick this up, there's two droughts in the land. There's a drought in the land caused by no rain, and there's a drought in the land caused by no prophecy. There was nothing being taught about God because they feared for their life from Jezebel. So Elijah heard from God that it was now time. It was time to confront King Ahab, who really wanted to kill Elijah. So look at verse 16. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, is that you, you troubler of Israel? I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's command and have followed the Baals. So here as we begin, Obadiah is a little worried because Elijah says, go tell King Ahab to meet me. And Obadiah knows if I go tell King Ahab without killing you, he's going to kill me. And Elijah assured him, I'm going to be right here. You go get King Ahab and tell him to come here. Ahab comes and the first thing he said to him is, you troubler of Israel. Now that's a great start to our message this morning. I find myself more in trouble than a troubler. A troubler is one who stirs up. It's one who disrupts the normal goings on. I'm one that more is in trouble, especially at the house. So I picked up the cleaning the other day on Friday. And when I put the cleaning in the car and took it home and then I brought it out of the truck and put it inside, I noticed that there was an extra part of the cleaning. In fact, we have this hamper that is in the closet and I throw all the stuff that needs to go, the cleaners in there, but I accidentally throw some of my stuff that I wear around the house, you know, that stuff that could be worn more than one day. I got a He Is Greater t-shirt cleaned at the cleaners. Now, those are those free, cheap t-shirts that we give you every Christmas so that you can wear them around. You don't have to get those dry cleaned. In fact, it's $3.99 if you do. So I just encourage you not to get those dry cleaned. But I thought I better come clean with this, so I told Marcy. So, you know, like I said, I always find myself in trouble more than a troubler. You know, the thing with being a troubler in this situation for Elijah was that the values of the kingdom of heaven are such a total reversal from the values of the kingdom of this world that those who are faithful servants of God seem like troublemakers in the eyes of the world. When we follow God, when we're a faithful servant, we're going to be called a troublemaker. When that kind of trouble comes, people don't turn back to God. They turn against Him and His followers. If you want to know about that, look up Acts chapter 24, verse 5. When Acts chapter 24, verse 5, it is the high priest Ananias who takes Paul before the governor of Caesarea named Felix. And when he takes him before the governor, he says, we have found this man, Paul, to be a troublemaker. He stirs up riots among the Jews and all the world. Now, you know Paul. You and I know him well because the Bible says that Paul took glory in that. If he's going to be called a troublemaker, so be it, because he's spreading the good news of Jesus Christ. But people don't turn back to God. They turn against Him and His people. They did the same thing with Jesus in Luke chapter 23. They took Him to Pilate, and when they took Him to Pilate, they said, we have found this man to be misleading the nation and stirring up the people with His teaching. He was a troubler or a troublemaker in the eyes of the people. But if you will be a faithful servant of God, it's okay to be a troubler. Then it goes on. He says, now, this is verse 19, summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel, the place where Baal worship was taking place. Elijah met them in their home turf. Mount Carmel became a showdown. It became a throwdown between Ahab and Elijah, between which prophet was telling the truth, which prophet was misleading and harming their nation. This was no Batman versus Superman. This is Baal versus Yahweh. You see, this was the big one. You know, Ahab goes and tells everybody, but he also tells the people. And there's this crowd of people that come to Mount Carmel because they want to see the throwdown between Baal and Yahweh. You know, I found it amazing, and maybe I shouldn't, but WrestleMania 32 tonight is at AT&T Stadium. And it's going to be packed. There's people from all over the world that have come to Dallas to see WrestleMania 32. And they've been interviewing on the TV, and I've just been amazed at that. But they love it. They come to see a throwdown. And these people, all they had to do was say, there's a battle between Baal and Yahweh. Y'all come. And they came. Now notice what happens in verse 21. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing. That's NIV. One of the versions says the people were silent. That idea of wavering is being half-hearted. It's being partly for God, but partly for Baal in their situation. It was the idea of hedging their bets. Well, we want to make sure that we serve the right God at the right time. And Baal was the god of lightning and rain, and he helped them in the growing season. They wanted their cake and eat it too, or better yet, they wanted their Baal and Yahweh too. You know, I was sitting there getting my oil changed this week, and I go inside to wait where they're changing the oil. They've got a little waiting area. There's another guy in there, and they had the TV on to a channel that I don't watch. And on it came this psychic commercial. And it said, if you'll call them, they'll figure out your problems for $1 a minute. And I thought back to all those times I've listened to church members and not gotten $1 a minute. And gave advice and all that. And I thought, man, I have been behind the times. But I took a picture of that commercial. The guy probably thought I was nuts in there that was with me in the waiting room. But I took a picture so I could remember. $1 a minute. People call that because they want answers. They have false idols. They waver between God and a false idol. But we can't blame that on other people. We do the same thing. Sometimes our false idols are materialism and money. It's success, it's power, it's relationships. It's all the things that we put ahead of God or think that they can give us the answers to what we need. Maybe we've tried to pray to God and that prayer hasn't been answered. And so it's time to go somewhere else. They're hedging their bets, and Elijah, he makes them choose. He says, there's a choice. It's between God and Baal. Which one are you going to follow? The Bible has done that before. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19, Moses tells the people, I have set before you blessing and curse, life and death. Choose life. Joshua 24, 15, Joshua goes before the people. We all know that verse. Choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But do you know the whole verse? So if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your ancestors beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in the land you are now living, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The people are living in the land of the Amorites. They are serving gods that aren't our God. And Joshua says it's time to choose. Jesus did the same thing in Matthew 6, 24 when he says you can't serve two masters. There's a choice. But the sad part about our message here is that the people were silent. Then he goes on in verse 22 and says, then Elijah said to them, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves and let them cut into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you can call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire, he is God. Then all the people said, what you say is good. They were silent when he was asking them to choose. But when he puts down the rules for the throwdown, they're all in for it. That sounds like a great fight. A God that's going to put fire to their altar. Then in verse 25, Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one of the bulls and prepare it first. Since there are so many of you, call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire. So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Elijah gave them first shot. This is early in the morning when they started this throwdown. Elijah gave them first shot. He gave them home bull advantage. I thought you'd like that. Home bull advantage. You pick the first bull of the two bulls. I don't care which one you take. Here's the only rule. You can't light fire to it. Your God has to light fire to it. Notice what the prophets of Baal are doing. Then they call on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Baal, answer us, they shouted, but there was no response. No one answered, and they danced around the altar that they had made. That idea of dancing or hopping around the altar was kind of like the people. They were wavering. They were hopping around from God to Baal, from God to Baal, from God to one other idol. And here it is, these prophets are going crazy because it started at mid or morning and now it's getting close to noon and there's still no answer. They're frantic. Their prayers are abrupt. Their preparation is sketchy. And then around noon, it says in verse 27, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he is deep in thought or busy or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and must be awakened. All of the things. Now, Elijah's making fun of them. It's just now funny to him. It's past noon. It's now going to be approaching toward midday, and there's still no answer. and they're still frantic at trying to get their God to answer and come and light that fire on that altar. And so now he says, what is your God doing? They used to think that the God of Baal slept during the dry season. That's because he didn't answer them, because there was no rain during the dry season. But when rain came, they thought that's when Baal woke up. But he also says, is your God traveling? Is he busy? The original Hebrew actually says, is your God going to the restroom? What's he doing? Is he away? Is he not able to answer you? Then it says in verse 28, so they shouted louder, they slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response, no one answered, and no one paid attention. I said there were two droughts in the land. There's also two silences that are going on. The silence of the people, when he said, choose who you're going to serve or follow, and the silence of their God. That's because all the false gods lined up can't answer prayer. They can't answer prayer. You can try and try and try and call all those hotlines you want to do and do all those other things to serve idols, but they can't answer prayer. Then Elijah comes on the scene, and very methodically, very impressive and dignified in the way he sets out the what's going to happen and his prayer. It says, then Elijah in verse 30 said to all the people, come here to me. They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, your name shall be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it large enough to hold two seas of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill four jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again, he said, and they did it again. Do it a third time, he ordered, and they did it a third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. Now that's confidence in God, that you've now doused it for the third time. Now here in verse 36 is the first time Elijah's called a prophet. But that's because it's the moment that this happens, it shows his authority and the emptiness of the Baals in being able to get their God to answer. And at the time of sacrifice, verse 36 says, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord. Answer me so that these people will know that you, Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the soil, and also licked up the water in the trenches. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Elijah comes, and now when he does his prayer, it's less than a minute. It's getting ready to be evening. The Baal gods went from early morning all the way to the evening sacrifice, nothing. Elijah knows it's time for the evening sacrifice to God. He trusts that his God's going to answer, and he sets that up out in the altar, and then he prays that prayer that's less than a minute. But that prayer is so important because it's a prayer that glorifies God, and it calls for evangelism. It calls to turn the people back toward God, and God answers. God answers because he's never absent. He's never busy. He's never sleeping. Psalm 121, verse 3 and 4 says, he who keeps you does not sleep. He who keeps all of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. God does not sleep. When you call upon the name of the Lord, anytime, he hears your prayer. Hearing for God is constantly active. I saved hearing for the fifth sermon. Do you know why? Hearing for us is constantly active. All your other senses take a break at night. When you sleep, all of your other senses do. Let me tell you how that happens. I need to someday say that, you know, go to one of those support groups and say, my name is Jeff Moran and I'm addicted to brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts. I'm telling you, they're wonderful. And the problem with those is if you eat one, there's two in the package, you can't put the other one back in the box because it'll get stale. Now, my problem is I used to love to eat those in the middle of the night. Like I wake up and I think, I'm hungry. and I go in and get a Pop-Tart. When we first moved to Waxahachie, our bedroom is kind of close to the kitchen, our master bedroom. And our puppies, we have two little Yorkshire poodles, Yorkie poos, and they're sleeping in there in the bedroom. And I get up and I think, I need some Pop-Tarts. And I go and I open up the pantry, and the pantry door squeaks. And when it squeaks, the puppies go, burr, burr, burr. And when they bark, Marcy wakes up. Do you know why? Because hearing is constantly active. And now I'm caught because I have brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts that I'm trying to get rid of. Or peanut butter is another one that I have to wake up in the middle of the night. So now I have to hide outside. But constantly, constantly active. Do you know that our hearing is constantly active? Smoke detectors. A smoke detector doesn't show pictures that your house is burning. Your sight takes a break. A smoke detector doesn't put out a smell to wake you up. Your smell, sense of smell, takes a break. A smoke detector can't touch you and it can't make you taste something. It wakes you up by putting out a sound. I thought about bringing one and hitting the alarm on it to wake you up. But that is because your hearing is constantly active. And it needs to remind you that God's hearing is constantly active. He is never too busy to hear you. Our God always answers prayer. Our God always hears prayer. Do you know why I know? Because the Bible tells me so. 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, "If my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven. I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land." And then the Bible goes on in Psalm 37:4, it says, "Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart." Psalm 55:17 says, "Evening, morning, and noon, I cry out in distress and he hears my voice." Psalms 86:17 says, "When I am in distress, I call to you because you answer me." Isaiah 59:1, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, says, "Behold, his ear is not so dull that it cannot hear, nor is his hand so short that it cannot save." He hears you. Jeremiah 33:3, what they would call God's phone number, "Call to me and I will answer you and I will tell you great and mighty things which you do not know." Matthew 7:7, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will should be opened to you." Jesus tells the disciples in John 14:14, "Ask me anything according to my will and I will do it." John 15:7, Jesus says, "If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you will and it will be done for you." John 16:24 says, "Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask ye shall receive that your joy may be made full." And one of my also my favorites is 1 John 5:14. This is the confidence that we have in approaching the throne of God, that if we ask for anything according to his will, he hears us. God hears our prayer. God answers our prayer. That is because there is no God like Jehovah. That song that we talk about, the days of Elijah, there is no God like Jehovah. We serve a risen Savior. The resurrection calls for us to make a commitment to him. Not to waver from one thing to another. We need to make a commitment and follow God with all of our heart and soul and strength. But if you choose to do that and be faithful, know that you will be labeled a troublemaker. But I would rather be a troubler than one who is in trouble. Remember God's senses. He uses all of his senses because he loves us so much. He cares for us and he hears us.